CSL TV. Okay, so if you have a card with a question, I want you to raise it up. Our ushers are going to grab them. They don't know that. They are now. They do now. They're written, so if they've got a card, grab it and bring it to me, please. Let's see what we get today. I never know when we do this. I'm always a little nervous. All right, and if you've got something else, it can come up during. Just wave it at me. But I'm going to start with the questions that I got from the kids. Oh, you got another one for me? Yeah, I'm sorry. Thanks. I should have had you put your age on it, too, because the questions came in with kids with their kids and their ages on it, so I should have had the adults put their age on their questions, too. That would have been funny. Oh, I didn't think of that one. Okay. All right, so we're going to start here with a question from Michael, who's 7, and I don't know if he's in the room. Well, we'll see. Okay, is there a 7-year-old Michael in the room? Okay. All right, well, Michael asked this. He says, it's not Reverend Michael. I know you're not 7. I know it's not you. Okay. All right, so Michael, who's 7, asked, how did God create the world? Let's start with the little one. So in thinking about this and putting together, I have, you know, a lot of information I could do. And again, the idea is to answer the kids' questions on that level and get something for us also. So this is what I would say to Michael, is that truth is we don't know, right? We don't really know how God created the world. And I'm not going to pretend that I know because I wasn't there, I don't think. And I don't really know. But there is something that has been passed. This is a question that has been asked for all of time. This is a question that has caused man from before, you know, time to look up to the heavens and to look at the earth and try to figure out what life is about and how we all got here and what's the point. And so it leads to, like, some big questions for my friend Michael, who's 7, right? For my friend Michael, who's 7. I could write a whole dissertation on this. But the whole idea is that what happened back in those days is that they started to create stories that made sense to them, to the peoples of the time. And so we have these series of what they call creation stories. They have creation myths of how the earth and the heavens was created. And all of these different disciplines, when I was doing my research this week to answer this question, I spent more time researching this question than writing a sermon every week. So my whole idea of having a week off from creating a sermon just gave me like double the work, just so you know. Okay, but it was very interesting because all the reading for this, what it showed me was that there are, I thought when I first started to do it, because I've done a little bit of research on this already, that there were a handful of different creation myths, right? Like there were different ways of looking at how the earth and the heavens were created. Well, there's like 30 at least. There's probably hundreds. But every peoples, every different religion, every culture has its own creation myth. And they're very interesting. I don't have time or the ability to share them all with you, but I wanted to share a couple. So from the Hindu perspective, it's called Yugas. And so they believe that this is not the first world or the universe. There have been and are many more worlds. They were created by Lord Brahma, the creator, Lord Vishnu, the sustainer, while Lord Shiva plays the destroyer. And it's in the three of those, the creator, the sustainer, and the destroyer, in that cycle of creation, right? So these three gods are forms of the supreme entity. The universe is a vast ocean on which Lord Vishnu resides. And what happens is that the story of creation in Hinduism mentions that when Brahma gets lonely, he splits himself off into men and women. He splits himself off into man and animals. He splits parts of him from different parts of his body. And so every night, he said that I thought this was interesting, that one day of Lord Brahma is supposed to be longer than 4,000 million earth years. So every night that Lord Brahma sleeps, the world is destroyed and recreated. Every day it's created, but 4,000 million years or something, right? So I thought that was an interesting one. It's called Yugas. So the Islamic creation story says that Islam or Muslim religion state that when God wants to create something, he says be, and it becomes. Anybody recognize that? He speaks it into being. This was how God created the earth and the heavens. He created creatures that walk, swim, crawl, and fly. He also created the angels, the sun, the moon, the stars. The Holy Quran says that God caused it to rain in torrents and generated corn and grapes and olives and palms and fruit trees and grass. Then he ordered the angels to bring 7 handfuls of soil of different colors and modeled man. He breathed life and power into Adam, the first man, and Eve, the first woman. So that was the Islamic creation story. And then most of us are familiar with the Christian creation story. From Genesis 1 and 2 in the Old Testament of the Bible tells the Christian story of creation of the world. According to it, in the beginning, God roamed the universe and the waters and created light and darkness. On the second day, God created heaven and separated water from the earth. On the third day, he raised the dry land and created plants. On the fourth day, God made the light day and the lesser light night. On the fifth day, he created the creatures of the sea and air. And on the sixth day, God created all kinds of living creatures on the earth. And on the seventh day, or the Sabbath, God rested. Right? So it's one thing for us to, it's such a great question, and I love that it came from the kids, right? Like, because it's such a core question that we live with through our whole lives, and we're never going to really know that. And what's at the core of this is the mystery of life, right? We got plopped on this planet that's spinning and hurling itself through space, right? And our little human brains can't stretch enough to hold that reality without some understanding of why we're here. And so there is a desire, and it's very deep in us to understand, to know. But the truth is that there's a big part of this life that's a mystery, and there's a question about it, and we're going to have to live with that. And try and find a way to embrace the question and the mystery, because out of that comes the magic. And so I hope that helped Michael, or all of us. All right, this one I love. This one's from Soleil. Okay, so what does God look like? Oh, I got some good, easy ones, right? I'm like, yeah, this is going to be easy. All right, So for anyone who's ever been in one of my classes, you can guess what I'm going to do next, right? What am I going to do? I'm going to ask you, what does God look like, right? Like, so I don't have an answer to what, this is another one. I don't know why you're asking me all these questions that I can't know. Well, we can't know what God looks like because God's not a person. God's not a human. God is an essence or a presence. It's a spirit. It's beyond, it's more than what we are. And so the idea of trying to figure out God as a separate, I'll tell you, God does not look like Santa Claus. God does not act like Santa Claus. If you're good, it'll give you good stuff. That's not what God does. But the idea is that what we believe is that God is in all things. God is bigger than we are. It's this intelligence and this knowing, and it's this creative force. And it's part of each and every one of us. So yes, I did hear someone in the back murmur, look at your neighbor, and then you'll see the face of God, because you're sitting next to God. And when you look in the mirror, you're looking at the expression of God, because we are all part of that divine expression and that divine love and that divine individuality that we are. And I hate it when they fall off the chair. It's okay, buddy. It's okay. And so, what I want you to think about, and especially for my young friends in the room, what I want you to think about is when you feel that you're in something that's bigger than you are, like when you feel like you're at a place that makes you go, that's looking at God. Okay? So maybe for you it might be, did anybody go to the mountains this summer? Did anybody go to the mountains this summer, right? Okay, did anybody go to the beach this summer? Did you go to the beach? Yeah. So maybe it's being at your favorite place. Maybe it's standing in front of the ocean and going, whoa, that's big. there's a lot of fish in there. Or maybe it's standing at the top of the mountain and seeing a beautiful sunset. Maybe it's whatever it is, but it's that thing that touches you deep inside yourself. You're looking at God. And my best wish for each and every person here is that when you look in the mirror, that the part of you that judges yourself, that thinks I'm not pretty enough, or I'm not young enough, or I'm not whatever enough, I'm not enough of whatever, I wish this was different, or I wish this was different. If those thoughts come up, my best wish for each of us is that the truth of you looking at the perfection of God as you comes up too. Because that's alive in you also. Because each and every one of you are an expression of God. And so what does God look like? Look at your neighbor. Everybody look at your neighbor. Look at your neighbor. Look the other way. Okay, there's God. All right, Soleil, I hope that helped. Okay, and then this one I love. This is from Luna. Is Luna here? Where's Luna? Luna, do you want to come talk to me about your question? Do you want to come see me? Come here. Do you remember what your question was? She didn't know we were going to do this. Come on up. Do you remember, or do I have to tell you? Do you remember what your question is? You want to hold the mic? You want to say hi to everybody?
Hi.
Hi, this is Luna. So, Luna, do you remember what you asked? What did you ask? I hope it's the same thing that I prepared.
Why does God keep us?
Yeah, why does God keep us close? Right?
Yeah.
What do you think about that? You don't know, that's why you asked me. Because he loves us. You're right. So one of the things that I wanted to tell you about God is that God keeps us close and we keep God close because God needs us. You know why? Because God doesn't have hands and he doesn't have feet and God doesn't have a body, right? But it uses us to express itself in the world. So you know how you said that God loves us? God needs us to express its love not only to ourselves, but to everybody around us. So the reason why we're close to God is that we're a unique expression of God. Do you know what unique means? That's a big word, huh? Unique means that you are the only you, and you're different from everybody else, right? Not everybody would come up and talk to me, by the way. I'm very proud of you that you did that, because even the adults wouldn't come up and talk to me like that. So I'm really proud of you for doing it. But so what that means is that each and every person in this room, including you, have special talents and abilities. Do you have something that you're really good at that you is a special talent that's uniquely yours?
I know how to do headstands.
You what? Say that. Say it in the mic so they can hear.
I normally do headstands.
You do?
Yeah.
Do you want to show me? You could. You don't want to? Okay. All right. Okay, so what I thought was, I figured that there might be somebody in the audience who knows how to hula hoop. Who knows how to hula hoop? Come on up if you know how to hula hoop. Okay, here we go. I got some hula hoops. I got four. Okay, you guys, I got four, so we can do four at a time. So, okay, how about going down in the front? Two, three, four, and then we'll share, okay? I've only got four for now. You guys want to stand with me and watch them? Okay, so they're going to, see, because this is what I want you to know. I cannot hula hoop. I've tried to hula hoop for 48 years. I cannot hula hoop. But these guys can, so let's see. You want to hula hoop? Let's go. Yeah. Okay, one more try, and then we'll have our friends go try. Yeah, you don't want to do it? Oh, it's okay, but you could try. Do you want to try or you want to stay with me? You want to try or no? You don't want to try? You don't have to. Okay. All right. Do you want to go try? Okay. How about someone shares? You're fine. You can keep going. All right. All right. Let's see. Are you still going? All right. You can stay with me, okay? I love it that you're up here with me. That's great. All right. Yeah. Okay, all right, so this is the deal, everybody. There is some people who are good at this and some people are not, but some people are good at other things. Does anybody else in the room have something you're really good at that you want to share? You're good at what? At what? You want to do, what do you want to show us? You want to show us something? Oh, you're good at flying? Okay, good. Cheerleading. Great. You're good. She's good at painting. Okay. What? You're good at headstands. Yep. All right. So what else? Oh. What else? You do Taekwondo. Okay. What else do you do? You do flips. Cool. All right. So this is the point. God needs us to express who we are. You know why? Because we're the only ones who can express God in this life. So we are all needed and necessary. We're each an individual like a snowflake. No, it's fine, sweetie. She's fine. You're fine. We're just hanging out. I'm hanging with my friends. So what that means is that we are called to express who we are. And it's not only a nice thing to do, and of course we're using, you know, hula hooping and other things as an example of this, but the truth is your individual perspective of this life, your individual perspective of who, of what's going on, your individual perspective is necessary and needed for the whole. And so every time we hold back who we are, every time we censor ourselves in something that we feel needs to be said, every time we cut a part of ourselves off because we think it's not acceptable, we are insulting God. And so we are here to live life fully as the divine. And so as far as I'm concerned, let's all hula hoop. Okay? There you go. Okay, you guys want to go back? All right, I got to go on. Thank you so much, everybody. Thanks. Okay, let's put these down for now, but when... during the songs and stuff, you can come back. You can just set them down there, right there. It's fine. Okay, yay. See, fun. Yay, fun. All right, so now we go into the I have no idea what's coming. Okay, thank you. You don't want to read this one? You don't want?
Don't read it out loud.
You don't want me to answer it?
Don't read it out loud.
Okay. We can talk after if you want. Okay, that one too. Okay. They're both? Okay. It's a really good question. What? You don't want me to? Okay, I'll do what you want. I'll do, but we should talk. And I think it would help other people in the room, but that's okay. All right, so someone said, what's up with the move? Hey, Rev, what's up with the move? All right, so what's up with the move is that we are in... we are waiting on a proposal from another organization that is intending to sublease the place. So we're waiting for their proposal. And as soon as that proposal comes in, we're going to negotiate it and get on out. So that's where we're at. We're like in the waiting stage again. But there we are. Okay. All right. How would you define a religious person and a spiritual person? Yay. How would I define a religious person versus a spiritual person? A religious person is someone who's going to follow the rules of the dogma or of the religion despite the situation in front of them. So what I find is that religious people are a little bit more rigid in terms of the rules that they follow of their religion, and a spiritual person is someone who is present to what's in front of them, and their intention is not necessarily to follow rules that say you'll get to heaven when you do what, or you know what your reward is. But a spiritual person, someone who wants to share compassion, love, and peace now, right? So it doesn't matter what the rule is. We're in our compassionate hearts now, and that's what I believe Jesus came to teach us. I believe that was the basic teaching of Jesus, was how to be with one another in this life. How to welcome the stranger, how to give of ourselves, how to be non-judgmental, how to be forgiving, how to be accepting. Those were the things that Jesus came to teach us. And so that's the fundamental foundation of the Christian religion, is the teachings of Jesus. But it's been warped a little bit in certain segments into the rules about the teachings of Jesus, and not about modeling the light and the master teacher that he was. And so that's what we're based on. Religious science and science of mind is based in the teachings of Jesus, and how we can be better people, how we can be channels of light and love unto this world at this time. And as everybody in this room knows, we need to be channels of light and love in the world at this time. And so that's what I believe. And that's me. That's the world according to Rev K. Okay, this is a good one. I'll do this one, and then I'll try and do this one. I got a couple minutes. Okay, so please explain Christ consciousness. So that's a great one coming off this talking about religious versus spiritual. Christ was not Jesus' last name. Okay? You've heard that. And Some kids have only heard it when their parents are mad. But Christ was not Jesus' last name. It was a designation of a state of consciousness that he attained in his life. And that state of Christ, what Christ's consciousness is it's an understanding of oneness. It's an understanding of our direct connection to the infinite presence of God, and that in that there is no limitation, and that in that there is no separation, and so that we are part of that. So that's what Tibetan monks are meditating and chanting to gain nirvana is about gaining that level of Christ consciousness. That's what all the mystics of all the ages, of all the different religions, whenever you read any of the mystics, the Christian mystics or the Jewish mystics or any of the mystics of the day of all time, have come up with one thing: that there's only one, we're all connected, and it's all love. That's the idea of it. And so it's Christ consciousness is attaining that understanding and that knowing. And so that's what we are aspiring to go into that place of knowing, as the Christ did, that all is well, for God is here. And that's why I end most of my prayers with that, to try and step into that knowing that there is nothing here but God. And as we put our attention on the goodness of God, we literally pull it into the experience and let everything else, all of the darkness, all of the separation, all of the fear, all of the everything that comes from that fade. And what rises is that connection and that understanding. And so that's my off-the-cuff definition of Christ consciousness. So someone says this, and I'm gonna share it. Okay, so this question is, I should have people put names on these. What's your fondest memory during your practitioner journey? So for those of you who don't know, in our spiritual denomination, we take classes. We come on Sundays, but we also do our own individual work during our classes. And when you take a certain amount of classes, you're eligible to step into what we call our professional practitioner training. And our practitioners are amazing, and they're going to do wall of prayer in a little bit here, so to be available for prayer for everyone. But our prayer practitioners are spiritual coaches and spiritual counselors. And we partner with people. And so my personal journey was that when I found religious science at the time, back in the late 90s, I was so drawn to it that I went straight into class, and I woke up in prac training without knowing I got there. Like, I had no idea what a practitioner was, and I was halfway through prac one, or actually it was at the end of prac one, when I realized, wait, I'm becoming a practitioner? Like, wait, what? And so, anyways, what happens is that it's a 2-year program, and you become a licensed practitioner, and that's where I got the call to walk this path and to know this for others, because I started to see the difference it was making in my life. Now, what happened was, and I'll share my personal story, is that the maybe not my fondest memory, but my biggest memory of my practitioner journey was this, was that there was a day when my life was falling apart. Ever have one of those? Where I was in conflict with my boss at work, and my relationship was breaking up, and things were rocky with my family. I mean, it just felt like all of the structures of my life were disintegrating. And I went to prac class, and my practitioner teacher said to me, and I have said this to many people over the years, this is a day to go home and put your head under the pillow. And just cry and get it out. And just, if you're going to be like this, just be like that. And then get up and figure out what you're going to do tomorrow. And I thought that was the most powerful advice I ever got from anyone about anything. Because what it said to me was this, is that we cannot pretend that the tough stuff is not happening in our life. We can't pretend that everything's okay and I'm going to be all right and use this philosophy, which is speaking truth into being, when it's false. We have to acknowledge that, you know what, it's really hard right now. You know what, it really stinks right now. You know what, I really don't like this right now. And yet, when we can acknowledge that, we can step into what we want. Because let me tell you, we have tools, and we have great possibility of transforming and changing and evolving. And everything in our life is there to feed and support us in our evolution. And so when you can say, now, it doesn't mean I need to go and be depressed for 2 months and, you know, just eat ice cream all the time and whatever. You know, whatever. Whatever those addictions are that we think make us feel better, we want to watch that tendency. But when we can be present with our discomfort enough to go into the center of it, there's a light at the center of it that dissipates it. And it's the light of truth of who you are and whose you are. And so for me, what that taught me was I have to acknowledge I don't like this. I know it can be different, and which way am I going to go? And it called me to that. So that was the biggest learning for my prep class. Take it, leave it, if that works for you. Okay. So the question is, what does religious science, Unitarian, and Quakers have in common? You want a dissertation? I wish I had this one at the beginning of the week. I got my phone. I could do a search. No. So I know a little bit about this. Universalist is not a religion that I have actually studied very much, but one of my brothers is a Unitarian Universalist, so their family has been brought up into it. I've always appreciated the Quakers, and again, that's not one of the ones that I've actually studied very much, so I'll admit it, and I think it's important for us to admit that what we know and what we don't know. But what I do know is that I think that each of these denominations have in common, from my level of study, is that they all encourage us to go within to our own knowing. That there's a component of it that is not external, but it's of our inner guidance and intuition. And so I'm only going to speak to what I know and what I believe I know. But the difference is this, is that having something outside of you or someone outside of you telling you what to do or what to be or how to navigate this life versus you having a deep understanding of who you are. And so this whole philosophy is about waking up. This whole philosophy is about awakening to your true nature starting to express that and create your life from that. And so that's the gift of it. And I believe that it's similar in these others. Now I have one more. Who wrote this one? May. Oh, there's one on the other. Oh! Oh, okay. So you got to tell me which one. Which are you, the 8 or are you the 9? I'm allowed to read the 9, but the 8 one's really good, though. I know a lot of people would like that. Let me do the 9 one, and then we'll talk, though. Okay. So this is from Kailani. Do you want to come up, or you want me to just do it from here? Okay. Everybody take a breath on this one. This is a wise being here. You want to ask it?
What do I do when I get sad about a death of a family member?
Yeah. Did you lose somebody you love? Who was it?
My dad.
Your dad died. So, you know, I lost my dad too. And we have to feel it. We have to allow ourselves to feel our sadness. And you're going to miss him forever. But what I want to tell you is there's some things you can do to remember the love, because we never lose that. And I love this. This is amazing. She's so brave. Thank you for doing this. Sharing your feelings with somebody else, so telling your mom or talking to a close friend or your minister or somebody that you trust, talking about how sad you are. Sometimes when you share your sadness, it feels better, right? Everybody agree with that one? Yeah. And one of the things that I was doing was, when right after my dad died, was I actually wrote letters to him about what was going on in my life. And I left him in a journal and just shared how I was feeling and what was going on. So I felt like he was always with me, because all this great stuff happened in my life after he left, and I was really sad that he wasn't there for that. But I felt like by writing this journal, because we're all connected, so what we believe is that God is everywhere present in this life and outside, like, right? And so what I believe is that we're always connected to them. So when you talk to him in your head, and when you, I used to go on walks, and I would have little chats with him, and then all of a sudden I started hearing his voice talking back to me. And now whether I'm crazy, now don't call anybody, or whether I felt like I was making it up, it brought peace to my heart. And so I'm just sharing some of these things, but the most important thing is to allow yourself to feel it, because you don't want to pretend it's not there, because when you stuff it, then it gets worse, right? To allow yourself to feel sad, and then have someone you trust that you can say, you know what, I'm having a sad day. And maybe they could sit with you, or maybe they could play a game with you, or maybe you could do some art or something, and that might help, okay? And anytime you need anything, you come see me, okay?
Okay.
Okay, give me a hug. Can we give Kailani some love? Brave, brave, brave! Yay, yay. Okay, Lily, last chance. Okay, well, everybody in this room gets this.
No.
Okay, fine. All right, so with that, thank you for playing Stump the Jump. I'm going to write a whole sermon on that for the end of the month, so come back at the end of the month. We're going to talk about that question. You'll know what it is. Okay, so let's invite Melissa Lewis back up. And if my hula hoopers want to come back, or is it appropriate?